So this is the second day of this three-day retreat here in Tampa in March 212, dealing with the transformation of suffering. You know that underneath, you know, these contemplations and reflections and deep looking is the practice of mindfulness. Mindfulness allows us to clear the mind, to be present to what is going on in the world of phenomena, internal and external. So without mindfulness and without some capacity to calm and clarify the mind, looking into things, examining things, is very difficult. So always going along with this deeper looking into life and phenomena is the cultivation of the practices of mindfulness and stopping or calming, as we said yesterday. Just looking into two questions. A last minute entry. So the questions. So the questions all seem to relate to, somebody asks, how do I acknowledge the shadow side or muck out the basement? Do I need a therapist? Somebody else asked, is there a line between delving in the past, looking at one's wounds, you know, going into the basement to find where the smell is coming from, but how do you not focus and dwell there? And another question relates to, you know, at some point when you're suffering less, you know, can you just kind of go on with things? And is that just kind of spiritual bypassing? Again, as I said yesterday, you know, what Siddhartha did. And again, like I said yesterday, he's just a human being like us. He just looked deeply. Right? He saw the trees, but then he also saw it was a forest. I mean, what separates, I would say, people who sincerely enter a path of healing and transformation, as opposed to ordinary people, and many of us are ordinary people, and we still are ordinary people, or began as ordinary people, in the sense, I would say, there is never any deep looking. There is just a continuation of trying to find happiness, to avoid suffering in this life. And even though it never seems to work, and that all that efforts always have to be constantly revisited, most people just keep on trucking. Right? They just keep on trucking. So what we're talking about here is, you know, we're stopping and we're going, what's really going on? You know, what are the deeper themes of life? My life. Everyone's life. And then what are the implications of that for how I live our life? In terms of the specific questions that are asked here today, you know, we talked yesterday of the three levels of suffering, or the three types of suffering that are present. The first type, which we call the suffering of suffering, birth, sickness, old age, and death, and the implications of that, those are readily apparent to anyone, right, who stops and looks and all human beings will acknowledge those exist in life. The second level of suffering, which we could call the suffering of change, that nothing stays the same, sometimes they love us and sometimes they hate us, sometimes they praise us, sometimes they blame us, sometimes things go up, sometimes things go down, sometimes there's pleasure, sometimes there's lack of pleasure, you know, just the unfolding of life that is totally unstable, right? That trying to find any kind of permanent happiness or meaning in that, as I said, becomes a source of suffering. Now again, and then the third level of it is just, and we'll get more into that today, just perceiving oneself as a separate self and totally identifying with these composite parts that we call ourself is always at a deep, deep level, no matter how other things are going on in the world. If one is present to it, will always feel an unease, a dissatisfaction, an unsatisfactory sense at the deepest level of one's being. I think if you've looked deeply at all that, then you really understand it. There'll be no more spiritual bypassing, because those facts, not philosophical hypotheses, but facts, are always with us. And if we don't see them in ourselves, and we look around at our brothers and sisters in this life, and we'll see it in them, right? It might have spared us for a few days or a week, but if we're open, we will see it in others. Family, friends, neighbors, colleagues, work people, community, as we said yesterday, put on the news. So the omnipresent of suffering is a fact and always needs to stay with us. We should never lose our awareness of it. Because if we do, we can lose our compassion. We can lose our desire to be of service and alleviate the sufferings of ourself and others. So, as it says in one of the 14 mindfulness trainings of the Order of Interbeing, you know, do not turn away from suffering, but find ways of going to suffering. So even if you feel I've achieved a place where I'm not suffering, well, there is somebody around you who is suffering. And, you know, we can be present to them. The question of, do I need a therapist or not? And again, I have to be, you know, full disclosure, I professionally spent my life as a therapist. So I just want to disclose that. You know, I think it depends, to be honest with you. I think it depends. It's, you know, it's sort of like people, you know, there are some people who can, you know, no exercise is good for them, and they, you know, can undertake their own good exercise program. Other people, what? They need a personal trainer. They've, you know, unless they get a personal trainer to really keep them on target and show them what to do, they find having that kind of regimen difficult for themselves. So what does that mean? That means, if you feel on your own, and certainly the tools that you're being given here and the tools within Dharma and that are really accessible certainly have the capability of healing and transforming one. But that is not to say that it's often difficult to be objective about oneself and to stay with it ourselves and to really apply things objectively to oneself and consistently. So if you find that there are persistent types of internal sufferings within one's psyche, certain types of patterns of emotional reactivity, certain types of emotional afflictions that no matter what you do, you cannot get beyond, then oftentimes going to someone who has expertise, and there are people who have expertise in the alleviation of various kinds of ego sufferings and psycho-emotional sufferings, can be helpful. Why not? Right? I mean, but is it necessary to go into long-term therapy? It depends how long-term your ingrained habit patterns, traumas, etc., have existed within you, how deep and intransigent they are to your capability of transforming them on your own. So I think it's all good. Then the question is, how long do you stay in the basement? I would say long enough. clean it out. You know, it's a lot of times, there are a lot of people who come to the Dharma, who have done consistent work on themselves in the past through therapy or other kinds of programs, and when they begin to practice and their meditation practice deepens, and they are very they're discouraged to discover that things they worked on, childhood traumas, codependency issues, things like that, are all of a sudden present. And they get discouraged because they go, I thought I dealt with that. I dealt with that years ago. I don't know where you've gotten in the process here, but a lot of times, when you identify, when you get to the process of working with the suffering parts of you, people say, well, how many times a day do I have to, attend to these wounded parts of myself? And I said, as long as it takes, as many times as it takes to transform them, to make them feel safe and good. I mean, I don't know if it takes one time a day or 100 times a day, what does it matter? Right? I mean, if you're a parent and you love your child, you are attendant to them whenever they need you, right? If you have an infant, we know needs constant care, they're always needing something. They're always intermittently throughout the day suffering from something, right? They're hungry, they're cold, they have a wet diaper, right? They're constantly needing. I mean, we don't count the times and say, I'm only going to be available half a dozen times today to my child. and otherwise they're on their own. I mean, we laugh because it's ridiculous, isn't it? If there are parts of us that are wounded and need our attention, as many times a day as it takes. I mean, if we have a wound and it needs to be cared for, I mean, how many times a day do you dress it? Well, as many times as you need to keep it clean, right? I mean, so how long do you stay in the basement? Long enough. But I think maybe what's implied in the question is, can you stay there too much? And I think you can. I mean, I think many people, even after the patterns are recognized, even after the patterns are understood, and even after they know how to handle them, they continue to identify themselves. I mean, there are many people who continue to identify themselves as broken, wounded, less than. And then I think that becomes an impediment to real transformation. Better to identify yourself as a Buddha. Better to identify yourself with your intrinsic wholeness, with the intrinsic goodness of your heart and mind, right? And see these other things that have occurred that have caused these afflictive patterns in you, again, as things that just need to be cleaned up, taken care of, transformed. There are lots of ways of looking at it. But that's all it is. And really identify with your wholeness, right? Rather than identify with your brokenness, your woundedness. Even if I have a wounded arm, that's only one part of my body, right? Even if I have a bad stomach ache or a bad headache, most of my body is still quite well, isn't it? What do I identify with? Well, many people, when they have some kind of problem in their body, they're totally obsessed by that problem, totally focused on it, which, of course, magnifies it. They forget that actually most of their body is in a state of well-being. Right. Things are basically okay. So, we want to go down, into the cave, into the darkness, into the shadow, to acknowledge it's there. Why do we want to acknowledge it's there? Because even to say, shadows cannot exist without forms that are blocking the sun, right? Shadows don't exist by themselves. That's only in Peter Pan that shadows exist unto themselves. Shadows only exist in terms of bodies, right? So the whole idea of touching and bringing into full consciousness all aspects of oneself, and to stop dividing good, bad, light, dark, healthy, unhealthy, right? I mean, that's the way we divide it up, and we go, these I want, these I don't want, right? These I love to experience, these I never want to experience, right? And we you know, that's another duality. No wonder we don't feel whole. We don't feel whole because we are cut off from parts. We are parts of, right? So we want to stop being parts, right? We want to accept the whole thing. Now, again, I mean, why do we focus on suffering and not on, you know, the first day on happiness? Obviously, why? Happiness is not the problem. I mean, right? I mean, the suffering is the problem, right? You know, I mean, if you're a doctor in the hospital, you don't complain about all the sick people that are in there. You know, why are there always sick people here, right? You're a doctor. You know, why every day all I see is sick people? Why don't some healthy people come to me? Right? I mean, we say, well, because, you know, we don't need to explain it, do we? We understand. It's ridiculous, right? I mean, you know, when we're healthy, we don't go to the doctor, do we? When we're healthy, we don't need to go to the hospital, except as visiting people who need to be there. The problem is these parts of ourselves that we wall off from. You know, the resistance to dukkha, the resistance to acknowledging our own suffering and the suffering of the world in all the dimensions I talked about, takes a lot of energy. Energy that could be much better used. Keeping things in the basement. Repression, denial. All this stuff takes a lot of energy. Because even though you are probably very energetic, and again, it's just all wasted energy. So much better to use that energy for self-healing, or so much better using that energy for really, moving your life in a positive direction than maintaining status quo. But that, it doesn't work. That's also the problem. It seeps up through the vents. It seeps up through the vents. So even though you get the door to the basement locked, you think, securely, it comes and it affects you. Right? And you wonder why you have certain types of feelings, certain types of unhappinesses, dissatisfactions, emotions that seem to just kind of, it's almost like perfume. You know, perfume... You perfumes the atmosphere. You smell it, but it's, you know, it gives a certain quality to the experience, but you can't see it. Right? In a certain way, those parts of ourselves that are suffering perfume us. Right? So it may not be like very clear and distinct, but it certainly affects how we are. It creates a heaviness. It creates an overweening type of concern, or things like that, you know, burdensomeness, seriousness. There are all kinds of ways that our afflictions perfume our life, even when they're not active. So again, that's that. So, by and of itself, the full acknowledgement that suffering of the types, dukkha, of the three types that we talked about, that is pervasive in the human experience, in and of itself could be could create a sense of hopelessness. Right, it's sort of like being in prison with no way out. Right. So it could be hopelessness. But luckily, it didn't stop there. And it shouldn't stop there with us. Because the second noble truth is there is a cause of suffering. See, this is where everything gets wonderful. Right? The first noble truth, to really, you know, look at the mess. Right? And to acknowledge the mess, right? While it certainly brings us into reality, you know, it's a good reality check. In and of itself, you know, it's sort of, all right, though, I guess I'm resigned to living in this fairly painful, suffering world. And you know, actually, when I say that, I hear a lot of religions say that, right? Yeah, this is a pain, this is a veil of tears here, but if you, catch on to the right dogma and whatever, you know, you can get out next life, right? You can be saved from it. But that's not what's the Buddha taught. He said we can understand right now that this dukkha, this suffering, this dissatisfaction, unhappiness, constriction, alienation, angst, etc., fear, the whole, you know, there's a reason we experience life that way. Okay? There's causation. And now we are on the path with the second noble truth towards our liberation. Right? Again, it's like going to the doctor, you got all the, you know, first thing he, you know, it's all these terrible symptoms you have, but then he says, but there's a cause, or she says, there's a cause of it. Oh. It's not just because. There's a cause. The mechanic says, yeah, I hear all the, you know, all that malfunctioning in your car, but it's because of something. Right? And if it's because of something, then that something can be cured. That something can be transformed, that dealt with, fixed. So what is the cause of all this human suffering? Right? The Buddha, I mean, there are many, many things, but fundamentally we could say it is because of ignorance, stupidity. Human beings ignorant of the way things are go about life in a way that creates all this suffering. It is because of ignorance. Not seeing reality as it is, and postulating all types of false, skewed, distorted views about life, this is the cause, the essential cause, of why human beings suffer. Okay. Now, when the Buddha looked at reality, in reality means this life, meaning the life that we're leading. He saw that it was characterized by, well, one thing was impermanence. Again, everybody here goes, yeah, I know that. But we know that intellectually. If we really understood that in our hearts, deeply, already we would be transformed. Okay. So again, when we hear the word impermanence, we need to contemplate that deeply to really understand in the context of our own lives whether that is true for us. So impermanence means quite simply what? That everything is constantly changing. There is not one thing in this world that is stable. Everything is transient. Everything, all phenomena, Buddha said, is characterized by impermanence. So why does the infant become a toddler? And why does a toddler become a child? And why does a child become an adolescent? And why does an adolescent become a young adult? And why does a young adult become an adult? And why does an adult become a mature adult, a senior adult, a dying adult, a sick adult? Why? Because of impermanence. That's all. Why do sometimes things work and sometimes things don't work? Why is sometimes success? Why is sometimes things failure? Why do they like us and why do they don't like us? Right? Why do they notice us and why do they don't notice us? Why do they praise us and why do they blame us? Why is there pleasure and then there's no pleasure and pain? And then there's pleasure and then there's pain. Why is there happiness and then there's not happiness? And why is there joy and then there's sadness? And why is there coming and then there's going? And right? Ad infinitum. Because of what? Impermanence. That is one of the key. And again, I mean, everybody, you know, everything changes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But then when something changes, people freak out. Or they say, I can't believe that. Or, right? I mean, so that tells me what? No, you don't get it. You don't get it at all. We don't get it at all. If we got it, we would understand deeply. That would, all the changes, all the ups and downs, all the backs and forths, you know, there's only one word to describe it. Impermanence. Oh. So, the nature of life is impermanent. Secondly, the Buddha said the nature of life is non-solid, which also relates to non-self. That everything is, and this actually ties in with impermanence, everything is made up of parts, right? There's nothing that is self-existent, right? So, like this body, we call it a body, right? But actually this body is made up of many, 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 many parts, right? And all these parts are made up of parts. And all these parts that are made up of parts are made up of parts and cells and atoms and, right? It goes down, right? Until you realize that there's nothing solid in this body at all. It is just made up of parts. Well, no wonder it's always changing. So many variables are at play constantly in this body, right? And because it is not permanent or solid in any self-existent way, it is always subject to changes, right? Internal changes, but also what? There's lots of stuff going on out here. Anybody notice? All kinds of changes are blowing through. Like what? Like other human beings. Are they stable? Are they always the same? Do they act just the way you want? No. They're all over the place. They're a mess. They're chaotic. They're up. They're down. They're happy. They're sad. They have demands and wants and needs and, right? Likes and dislikes and this, right? I mean, you know, yesterday the sky was blue here, wasn't it? Now it's cloudy, right? Impermanent. Things aren't solid. We say weather, we say climate, but those are just words. Actually, it's all kinds of variables, right? Heat, and wind, and humidity, and, right? Sun, and so many things. Right? So, things are impermanent, and they are impermanent because of this essential non-solidity of things. In other words, nothing is permanent, nothing is solid. Okay. That is the way things are. As well as we talked about yesterday, there is also a significant deal of suffering in this life, difficulty in this life. That is also part of it. Now, human beings, ordinary unenlightened human beings, because of ignorance, meaning they don't understand this, they what? They look out at this world and they're looking for what? What are you looking for, John?
Solidity.
You're looking for solidity. You're looking for permanence. You're looking for happiness. Right? Can you see what a setup for failure that is? That's why the Buddha said ignorance is our fundamental problem here. Because you want what? You want to grow a beautiful garden, right? Flowers and fruit. You want everything beautiful, don't you? And yet the field is fallow. The field is fallow. So no matter how much work you do planting seeds, if the earth that you're planting in is fallow, has no nutrients, nothing of significance, beauty is going to grow. So the obvious thing is what? What?
Feed it.
Well, I wouldn't seed it.
No, feed it.
Feed it. You could feed it, or you could
transform.
Or you could
go someplace
else. But Elsbieta got it. We're always trying to seed it. We're always trying to make it work, aren't we? If I just, maybe change the color of the wall, change the paint, right? Maybe, redecorate a little bit, change my hairstyle, things will be better, right? Change my job, change my relationship, change my this, right? We always think what? Then we'll be happy. Then we'll have, but it can't be found. Right? It can't be found here. Why not? Because this field is a field of solidity. No. Composite parts. It's a field of permanence. No, it's a field of impermanence. It's transitory. Right? So it does not have the possibility of any way producing a consistent type of meaning or happiness. Which means you're not a failure if you haven't done it yet. Do you understand? Many people think they're a failure in life because even though they've worked so hard and they've accomplished this and done this and done that and done it all right, still at a deep level, I don't feel at peace. I don't feel whole. I don't really feel deep joy and ease, right? And we think, it's because of me. No, it's not really. It's because of you've been working so hard, so hard you've been working, planting your seeds in a fallow field. They will never produce what you want. And when you get that, that's why this meditation on suffering and the causes of suffering is essential. Because once you get that, once you are, we might use a word, you have to come to that place of disillusionment with worldly life. Where you realize it will never, no matter how much I push it, no matter how much I try to manipulate, control, and no matter how many coping strategies I develop, and there are endless coping strategies in this life, right? No matter how many coping strategies I develop, no matter how many serial addictions I develop, going from one to another, it's never going to work the way in my heart, I want it to be. And it's not your fault. Please understand that. It is because of ignorance. Right? I mean, wouldn't you love it, Anne, if you've been working that fallow field for 40 years, just working hard, always hoping for a bountiful crop, and all you produce is like, two measly tomatoes on every plant. I mean, wouldn't you love it if finally somebody came along and said to you, Anne, down the block, There is this wonderful field, and the soil is rich, and you will plant things, and you can grow everything you want. I mean, wouldn't you like somebody to come along like that? Yes. So that's the Buddha. That's Dharma, you see. This is very important. That's why, we are so grateful that masters, deeply enlightened masters, appear in this world, right? To go, there is a place where you can plant your seeds and you will get great rewards and results. And actually, it takes a lot less work. Right? It takes a lot less work. All that work we do, all that work to try to find happiness, right, in things that can never produce it. And we just work harder and harder and harder, get more and more stressed and exhausted, right, frustrated, disappointed, hurt, over and over again. It's the emotional cycle of people: angry, resentful, hurt, sad, disappointed, afraid, endlessly cycling through. And then we get up the next day and what? And do it all over again. Try it with a new person, a new job, a new life, a new wardrobe, a new addiction, a new outlook on life. I got a new outlook on life. So let's look a little more deeply into the cause of suffering. Well, if you read Buddhist teachings, you'll find many, many long lists of causation, all different kinds of mind states. I think the simplest way to look at it is, kind of a very kind of operational, kind of practical way of understanding it is, it is because that we identify with a separate self. This is the cause of our suffering. We identify as a separate self. We identify ourselves as an ego, separate from everyone else, separate from nature, separate from the world, separate from all of the phenomena. It is that fundamental mistake of identification that brings us into this world of dukkha. As we said earlier, upon investigation, we clearly see that all phenomena is impermanent, empty of solidity, always changing, always transient, nothing dependable there at all, right? And yet, we what? We constantly grasp at it. Constantly, consistently, from the moment we get up to the moment we go to bed, we consistently grasp. To grab on to this phenomena. Now, what is it that's doing the grasping? We would have to say it is what? Myself. Right? What is it that likes this and doesn't like that? What is it that needs this and doesn't need that? What is it... thinks it would get happiness here, thinks I've got misery over here, right? What is that? We'd say, it's myself, right? I mean, it's not my elbow, right? It's not my knee, it's not my gallbladder, right? Somebody cuts me off in traffic. Right? What gets angry? Right? Does my stomach care whether somebody cuts me off in traffic? What? No. Do my eyes care? My eyes saw it. Do my eyes care? No. Right? Who cares? Who says, jerk? Makes a big long story about it. What is that? What is that? That does that? We'd say what? I do, right? I do that. But what is this I that's doing all that? You're home, everything's all right, and all of a sudden there's a voice that goes, go do this. Or you're bored. Go shop. Go eat. Go get a drink. Go cruise the computer. Go watch TV. Go do this, right? Who says that? Right? Do you ever wonder who says that? No, we don't. We just... Aye, aye, sir. I'm just here to serve you. Right? Right? Just one more scoop of ice cream. Even though we know it's not good for us. Aye, aye, sir. What is that? What is it that craves, that says I need more, that says I don't want the pleasure to stop, right? Keep it coming. What is that? That grass, you know. In Buddhism, we say the cause of suffering is desire, grasping, attachment, avoidance. You know, all that stuff. You know, that's what we're doing. Always trying to get it right, right? Just get everything I want into my life and get it right. Get everything I don't want out of my life. You know what I mean? And then what? Then everything will be good. I'll be happy and life will be good, right? But it's because of, right, impermanence and the impermanent nature of all phenomena, and because everything is changing and everything, including your life, is made up of so many parts and so many variables, and it only lasts for a short time, right? So even when you get it together, you're anxious because it may what? Mm. It may change. It may begin to fall apart, right? You know, things are going great. Never at peace. Right? Because there's this part of ourselves that's always, always, always looking at the world of phenomena through its eyes, wanting to use things for its purposes only. And when it gets what it wants, it is happy for the moment. And when it doesn't get what it wants, it is resentful, angry, pissed, disappointed, hurt, jealous, afraid, right? All those things. Where does that come from? It doesn't come from your body, does it? You'd say what? It comes from me. I'm the one who needs that. Right? I'm the one who must have that. Oh, okay. Well, if it's not your body, then it must be your mind, right? Right? I mean, most people agree we're body-mind. So if it's not my body, it must be my mind. Oh, well, where in my mind, you know, is this sense of need and want and must have and must avoid coming from? Good questions. Most of the time, we don't look deeply into that. We just say, it's me. I want, I need, I must have. And because of that, we enter this world of phenomena that is essentially always in motion, always transient, always permanent, always changing, and we grasp, we push, we pull, we manipulate, right? And we are always in a state of what? Unsettledness. As well as, again, we are constantly producing within ourselves all these kinds of afflictive emotions. Why? Because we're doing something that is fundamentally wrong. We're trying to control that which can't be controlled. We're trying to make permanent that which is impermanent. We're trying to find stability in that which is essentially is unstable. Right. What is the cause of that? This self that is ignorant of the way things are and just lives like a child through its own projections, its own fantasies, its own needs. It's endlessly projecting onto the world its stuff. Endlessly. And we always follow it into the world rather than going and looking, who said that? Right? Who said go shopping? And we just, aye, aye, sir. You need a new car. Aye, aye, sir. I'll go get a new car. Right? Endlessly needing, always looking around, right? Gets a new car. Month later, it wants a new toaster. Right? You know? Right? Endlessly, 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 right? You know, gets on the internet looking for something, but then a voice comes, well, why don't you go look for something else? And, oh, I wonder about that, and I wonder about that. And before we went, off we go, right? Hours go by. Who's giving the orders here? We don't know. And yet we follow it endlessly into the world of phenomena. And at the end of the day, are all its activities productive of happiness? Do you have a sense of deep well-being? Peace? No. Because that type of activity cannot produce it. It only produces one thing. Dukkha. That is the cause of dukkha. It begins with ignorance, again, begins with a false identification with self, and then the self begins to act out in the world, endlessly acting out, just stirring things up constantly. We call that dukkha. Are there any questions about this? Please understand that there is not one thing I'm saying that is not readily apparent to each and every one of us. I hope during the day in your meditations you'll look deeply into this. Is this true or not? You know? I mean, you need to decide, we need to decide, each of us needs to decide, is the world of phenomena, the world of relativity, the world of things, is it a place where permanent happiness, meaning, joy, ease can be found. Right? If you think it can be, you will continue to go there. But once you get it can't be, you can then, you know, in Buddhism there are two paths. The path of renunciation, the path of understanding. Right? The path of renunciation goes what? It's a fallow field. I'm getting out of here. Phew. You know, what a waste. I'm going to go off to the mountains and live by myself and cultivate a little garden and screw this nonsense. Right? That's the path of renunciation. It's a good, it makes sense. But for those of us who don't have that inclination or that prerogative, we have to do what somebody said earlier, which is what? How can I transform? How can I transform what I have? But I can't keep doing it the way I did before, can I? I can't keep putting my seeds and my seedlings into this soil that has no nurturance, right? I need to nurture in a different way. You know, this is the third and the fourth noble truth, which we'll maybe talk a little bit about today. But again, if we don't go through the process deeply, each one of us, of looking deeply into the nature of suffering, again, you just ask yourself, look at all the ways you suffer. And again, remember I said yesterday, anything that takes you away from a place of ease and well-being, right, calmness, is suffering. It's, again, although then all the way to the most painful states, there are all different levels of sufferings and types of sufferings. But we have to look at suffering through the eyes and the experience of the Buddhas and the Masters who tell us what. I mean, that was the great wake-up for the Buddha. It was like, wow. Right? Wow, he said. Like, there's this Buddha mind that each of us have that is totally free of all conditions. Totally pure, totally empty, unstained, right? That clearly reflects everything like the best mirror. Right? The things things arise in the mirror. The mirror doesn't comment on anything, does it? Right? The mirror just reflects. Right? Mirrors don't comment. Mirrors don't grasp. Mirrors don't say. When Anne looks in the mirror says, "Oh, Anne, please stay. I love looking at you." And, oh, and I see Fred coming. I don't want to look at him, Can you just get it? The mirror doesn't say that, does it? The mirror just reflects. It doesn't judge. It doesn't evaluate. It doesn't need. It doesn't want. It just purely that is our true mind. It has had that capacity. Right. So from that point of view, you see, This looking deeply into the nature of suffering, the cause of suffering, makes sense. Right? Because if there wasn't this capacity of the human mind, which means we have, all of us have the capacity for meaning and happiness and joy in life, right? You know? Again, if all Anne had was her fallow field, right? That'd be one thing. But if she can see right next door, there's this other very rich soil. You know, then we'd say, Anne, I mean, why don't you get over there? See? That's what Dharma's about. That's what teachers are about. They're saying, look over there. I mean, it's not far. It's right there. Just kind of turn your head. But we go... We kind of, because why? Yeah, we're addicted. What's addiction? Anybody know what addiction is? What's addiction? I mean, we live in a world where most people are addicted these days. What addiction is what?
Looking for happiness in all the wrong places.
Could be, but when you're addicted to something, just very simply, is what? When you're addicted to something, it's in control. You can't let go of it. You have to keep doing it, right? We're addicted, and we are addicted. And when you understand that we need a program, we need a recovery program, each one of us, because we are addicted, because we do things that when we are rational, we know better, right? Intellectually, everybody hears. Knows better than the way they're living their life. Everybody. Because you're all bright people, and you're all thoughtful people, and you've all thought about it. That's why you're here today, right? But we don't realize that we are addicted to our self-defeating, ignorant life. and that even though we know better, we keep going back for more, right? Just like the addict who goes, what? I'm not really addicted, right? Look, I stopped drinking. I haven't had a drink in 3 days. Aren't I a big shot? Right? Always trying to prove what? That I'm in control. But the unfortunate thing is we are, at a deep sense, addicted to this way of living and this identification to self. You know, many of us in our community, we do these things called intensives, in which we, for 3 months, 6 months, very deeply study and practice certain teachings. Right now we're involved in a 6-month intensive for this wonderful Buddhist teacher, Shantideva, on the path of Bodhisattva. Shantideva says what? He says, all the happiness of the world comes from cherishing others. All the misery of the world comes from cherishing oneself. He said, Buddhas know this. Childish beings don't. That's what Shantideva said in the 8th century, India. Right? How simple. Right? And yet, because we are so identified with ourself, because we are so egocentric. And I'm not saying that we're all arrogant people. I mean, egocentricity, in the sense that the Buddha says, egocentricity means all life, for me, centers through me. I am the center of my universe, right? And everything and everyone I encounter and every phenomena I encounter, I see through me. What's in it for me? Right? It's because of that stance we take in life that we endlessly create this unhappiness. But when we can break out of that stance, which is what the path is about, then happiness is really possible. And yet it is very difficult, isn't it? Because we are so addicted. We look at an addicted person and we go, you know, and we look at their life and we look at what's going on in life and we go, wow, what? Suffering. What a miserable life this person has of addiction, whatever the addiction is. Only producing suffering, right? You know, why don't, you know, I'll just have a good conversation with them and straighten them out and then they'll break out of their addiction, right? Isn't it that easy? Why not? I mean, addicts, you know, and they just keep going down, right? Deeper and deeper, deeper, more and more misery, more and more suffering to themselves and others. Why do they continue? Even though rationally anybody can see, and they can even see, it's just a path of misery. Why? Why don't they see? They're not looking deeply enough. They're in denial. Right? We're in denial. So in that sense, we can say the Eightfold Path is our recovery program for all of us. There is another way. It's a way of living that does produce happiness and meaning and joy. But one has to first look deeply into the nature of worldly life, worldly activity, the world of self, the world of self-centeredness, the world of egocentricity, and clearly see how this is the cause of our suffering. Has anybody ever gotten angry? Why do you get angry at somebody? I mean, why do you get angry at somebody? They're just doing what they're doing. Why do we get angry at them?
Because they're sharing with me.
Yeah, because they're not doing it the way I want. Right? I mean, you look at any emotional affliction, you'll see it is all because of self. Whether you prefer anger, resentment, whether you prefer hurt and disappointment and despair, whether you prefer fear and anxiety, you know, everybody has their emotional addiction of choice. Or maybe you mix them all. Jealousy, resentment, comparison, if you stop and go, what's at the center of this? Where is it all coming from? You will find me, self, issuing commands. Now, you know why the self does that? Because it doesn't really exist. So the only way it can prove that it exists is by making something happen. Right? That's why when nothing's happening, the ego gets what? Bored. Maybe some of you are bored at a retreat already. Nothing's happening. Right? Ego likes things to happen, doesn't it? Likes action. So it feels alive. Right? When the party stops, it's not happy. Because then you have to face and experience what? Dukkha. You get it? Dukkha. It's present in you. Because the egocentric life doesn't produce happiness. But self doesn't want to acknowledge that, does it? It wants to keep it going. So even when it comes up, it says, let's go shopping. Let's have a drink. Let's call somebody up. Let's go have fun. Because anything but this. Right? When we touch the essential kind of emptiness at the core of so many people's lives. Don't want to go there, do we? Let's get something cooking here. Right? Let's stir up some excitement. Maybe go pick on somebody. Get angry at somebody. Think about somebody else. Anything but face the truth. And again, we're facing the truth because why? Why do you want to, even though you've invested 40 years of hard work into that fallow field, right? Wouldn't you want somebody to finally, wouldn't you like to figure it out? It's a fallow field. You know, wow. There is another way. But we just addicted. Now again, left to our own devices, you know, people like the Buddha are very developed, right? And they can do all that work by themselves, as we know he did. And for most of us, we don't have that kind of development, that kind of strength. So we need what? We need teachings, we need teachers, we need community to support us, right? Because Anne's looking around, right? Going, I don't know, all my neighbors are bringing forth, these little tomatoes. Right? My parents, my ancestors, they've been hoeing this field, bringing up these little worm-eaten potatoes, for generations. Right? I don't know if I really want to leave. Right? It's all I know. It's familiar. And everybody else is doing it too. Right? We all get together and we exchange our little tomatoes and our worm-eaten potatoes and our shrunken cucumbers and, we're all... Somehow we survive, don't we? Somehow, look, we've survived all these years. Yeah. So, that's why we need support, guidance. Because of our habit energies. Are there some questions? Yes.
It always makes a world of sense to listen to you, Fred, and have you, unravel the knot. But when you're dealing with the powerful force, and I believe it's very powerful, of denial, which is when you're not really conscious of something, but you nevertheless are able to create a world around what you make sense of in your mind.
Yep.
It's a bit of a challenge to go ahead and to make it conscious. And as you said, you know, there are tools to do that, but you also have to have the intention to want to do it.
Well, all right, so the question is, yes, all makes sense, but yet we could say our worldview, our individualized worldview, is so strong and seems so real and seems so right at the time, right? Seems so right at the time. I'm right. You're wrong, right? At the time, right? It seems, you know, how do you break out of it? Yeah. Again, come back to this deep looking meditation into suffering and into the cause of suffering. So it leads to, again, there's a realization here. All these teachings have realizations. You know, the realization of this is this disillusionment with this kind of living. Right? One is a, you know, again, Alex, you may say, you know, I'm just using the addict model because it's something I think that we're very familiar with in our society these days. You know, the addict believes their worldview, right? What is their worldview? That they must have their substance, right? They cannot live without it. That is their view. And all their activities and everything they do to support their addiction is perfectly normal. Right? That is their worldview. How do you break out of that? How do you break out of that? How do you help somebody break out of that? Or how does somebody who is so caught up in that in that addiction and that view of the normality of their addiction, how do you break somebody out of that? Right? That's what you're talking about. It all seems so real and normal. And usually, you know, if someone's been an addict for a good while, they found their peer group who's telling them, you know, you're right, they're wrong. Right? So how do you break out of it?
One approach is that you make the circumstances so that they suffering is increased.
So what you're talking about, if you're somebody else?
Pardon?
If you're people out, you're not the addict themselves.
Oh, right. Well, if I were the addict myself.
Yeah, how do you break out of it?
Could be my answer.
What?
If I'm trying to do it myself.
Yeah, if you're the addict, like, you know, it's so habitual to you, it seems so normal to you, it's totally your worldview, you've been doing it for 30 years. Yeah, people do go into recovery.
You crash.
You what?
You crash.
All right, you crash means what?
Means that you, the suffering gets so...
Oh, stop. Yeah, suffering. There you see it. Dukkha. At some point, you're able to name it. As dukkha. It's suffering. I am suffering. And all these years of denial and projection and rationalization and blaming, you know, all that garbage, you realize, you know, it's I'm suffering. Okay.
Maybe it was the fear.
Okay. Yeah.
Fear gets just
yeah. I don't want this to, you know, where is this gonna end?
You can't go on.
No,
you can't do anything.
No. Now again, even you know, using the addictive model, we know when you say people hit bottom, people hit all kinds of bottoms. I mean, some people, you know, they've told me that they're addicts and they're in recovery, and when they describe their use, it seems fairly mild, but for them it was right. Other people, it's you know the bottom. So you know we can't judge, right? That level, but in the senses, whatever it is for each human being, they come to that point where they see what I am doing is suffering, causing me suffering, and causing others suffering. which is also a part of the model. Because again, the addict, when they're in their addiction, are totally selfish. Right? And even though they are harming other people, they don't see it and they may not even care anymore. But sometimes part of that, the end is acknowledging the suffering we've caused others because of our ways. Right? So, acknowledging dukkha is important. Okay. Now, just acknowledging you're an addict doesn't mean you have the capacity by yourself to not continue those patterns, right? So you need what?
Help.
You need help. You need help, right? You need help. So you what? You find a program, you find a sponsor, you find, right? I mean, that's, yeah, you need help. Got a big book, right? Yeah, so, I mean, the model is there, you see. The model is there. So we got to go to lots of meetings in the beginning. We got to keep reading the big book. We got to have a sponsor, right? Somebody who's outside who can clearly see what we don't see. But, my first teacher, Philip Kaplow, Roshi Philip Kaplow, used to say, he said, real spiritual practice begins with the cry of help. Very profound.
Yes.
You know, which is sort of what you're saying. I mean, you know, wherever it is in your life, you know, whether it's, mild or severe, whatever, you realize whatever pattern I am caught into, I cannot get out of it myself. Right? That's what you're saying, Alex. I can't get out of it myself. And so you need, at that point, all these other pieces until you really are strong enough, that you can see it all clearly. Yes.
You mentioned Shantideva, and one of the things that impressed me when I was reading Shantideva is he talks about positive obstacles. And it sounds odd and counterintuitive, but if you have enough success, you get enough accolades, you get enough things in our society that are valued, you get some wealth, you get some professional success, boy, is that a seductive place to go ahead and then sort of hang out before you get out of, or before you really start to say, but this really isn't working, because those positive obstacles are really... I guess they're called seductive.
Yeah, right. And that's, again, as you see in the teachings, those are acknowledged. Again, please understand, we're talking about, in a certain sense, we talk about worldly life, we're talking about everything. Right? Because even that pleasure that one gets from success, right, is what? Is transient. That's the key piece. The pleasures, the happinesses that come from getting what you want are transient. They do not have the capacity to provide a consistent, meaningful... You have to keep achieving, right? You have to constantly keep the story going of what you achieved to feel good. When you stop doing that, you do what? You've touched that emptiness that's always been there. It is always there. Not because there's something intrinsically wrong with Alex, right? We can't go down that road. It's because, again, the field is fallow. No matter how hard you work. And again, maybe your tomatoes were a little bigger than Anne's. Right? So you feel pretty good. I mean, she had two measly ones, and you had six fairly decent size this year. Right? But the guy who you can't see, he's probably got 100 tomatoes on his plate. It's like that. Again, again, one reflects in this way not to produce depression, but to produce disillusionment, right? Which is very different. It means I what? I see through the illusion. That's all. I can still enjoy seeing Santa Claus, even though I know it's not really Santa Claus, right? You know what I'm saying? It's okay, right? I can still go to the movies and enjoy the movie, cry at the movie, be scared at the movie, be at the edge of my seat on the movie, right? And yet know what? It's a movie, it's not real. It's all made up. It's just light and color and, you know, and the people in it that I'm so identifying with, they're actors. I mean, it's not even real, right? That's kind of a, I've seen through the illusion, but yet I can still live in it. But I don't have vast emotional, you know, I don't include the story of the movie in my life story. Right? If somebody included everything they saw on TV, every movie, every book they read in their life story, we'd say what? What? Yikes. Yeah. I mean. Yeah. So I mean, can you know? There's some like, oh, I can see clearly, you know, what's going on. Yeah. But yet, our own narrative. I was born here, and this happened to me, and that happened. I achieved this, and achieved this. Right. Our own made-up narrative of who and what we are—that we totally believe is true, and we identify. Just another story. Do you want to be free? Let go of all your stories. Life is meaningful enough just as it is. Yes?
I'm wondering, do you have to go down in the basement to find the reason why, say, Alex
unhappy
with,
I'm getting labeled.
Yeah. Well, I can use myself, but
oh, let's use Alex as a symbol of human unhappiness.
You need to go down in the basement to find why you are reacting more than the next person.
No, it's not. Forget about the next person. You want to go into the basement if things that have gone on in the basement are causing you suffering, that's all. Or you are suffering and you don't know why, and you've looked all around your house, right? Remember? There's a smell coming up from the basement. Okay? So first you check the attic, you check the second floor, first floor, right? I guess it must be in the basement. Well, you know, it's like you open the door, walk down the steps, turn on the light. See, that's the key piece. We don't want to turn on the light. Just, you know, let sleeping dogs lie, right? But we don't know what's in the basement. Maybe we think something's horrible down the basement. It may not be. It could just be a sad little child. It could be a scared little boy or girl. I mean, that's all it could be. Just somebody needs some attention, some love, some caring, some, you know, that's all. It may not be monsters. Maybe the idea of monsters is just our imagination. Right. Again, you know, it's like those questions people ask me at the beginning, you know, I mean, you have to go into long-term intensive therapy. I mean, I don't know. But, you know, go down in the basement, turn on the light, see what's there. Then you know what, you know what's needed to be done. There may not be much to be done. It just could simply be turning on the light is a great, significant move. Oh, now I see what's going on. Just, you know, I mean, my sense is you want to invite everybody up to the first floor. You know, that way you can keep your eye on them. So it's almost noon. Any other questions? Yes.
Hi.
Hi.
What if you are in the basement and you know it's causing the suffering, but that suffering is going to be in your life no matter what? You can't change it, and the suffering.
Can you just give me? You don't talk about you personally, but for example, that would mean.
There's two. So someone.
A person.
Right. That is going to be in your life no matter what.
Mm-hmm. And
yet they're causing your suffering.
How do they cause you suffering?
By their own suffering.
So they're suffering.
So their projections.
Hold on. So they're suffering.
Right.
Okay. And so how does that cause you suffering?
By their actions.
Such as? Give me an example.
Abandonment.
They have issues around abandonment.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I have issues around abandonment.
Oh, you have issues around abandonment. So look.
But their story is such that it makes them, I don't know how to explain it. So then I end up feeling guilty. I end up being the one, oh, I'm so sorry for you and your story.
Yeah,
I'm the one being guilty.
I know, but look what you're saying. You're saying what? Who has the issue with abandonment? Who has the issue with guilt? Who has the issue? Who?
Me.
You. Okay. You have the capacity of freeing yourself from all that.
But what if that person is in my face all the
time? Well, it makes it more difficult. I mean, you know, that's all I can say. It doesn't mean you can't do it. I mean, in other words, let's go just back to the alcoholic thing, right? I mean, if you work in a bar and you decide to go sober, it's a little more difficult, we could say, than, you know, if you can totally control your environment and get all the alcohol out, right?
Right.
All right. But let's say, you know, that's all you know how to do. So it doesn't mean you cannot, I mean, no one is forcing you to drink that alcohol, right?
Right.
Okay. So if I said to you, yeah, I mean, does that make it more difficult when it's right there? From a certain point of view, we could say yes, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what's your name?
Jennifer.
But I'd also say to you, Jennifer, you more than other people, because it's in your face, have a reason to transform whatever it is inside you that hurts when that other person acts that way, because it is in your face. And so when you use that quote-unquote painful experience to motivate your own transformation, then it becomes okay. Okay? Again, guilt, abandonment issues, hurt, resentment, fear, these are all arising in your mind in relationship to that person. We could say that person and their actions is phenomena. Just something that's happening, right? I mean, if that person, whoever that is, did it to me, would I get?
Mm-mm.
Why not?
Well, you wouldn't take it as personally.
What'd you just say? I mean, that's, do you see, Jennifer,
right,
that's your wisdom. Bingo. That's self. Remember we talked in the beginning? So now you see what we're talking about. Right. Right away, the self makes it about who? Me. And once you go down that road, suffering, right? Not only suffering for you, but your capacity to help the other person is also now nearly impossible, because now you're coming from your own woundedness.
Mm-hmm.
Can you see that?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you know. So taking things personally is just another way of saying, you know, I'm making this a story about me. But it's not about you, is it? It's about that other person.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't see them clearly and really help them in the way you'd like because you're wounded. You see?
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? It's like, if you're sick, how can you help? You know, if you're sick in bed, you can't get up and help anybody, can you? You have to get healthy first. It's about time. Oh, you know what? transmission. Have you talked about transmission?
No.
Okay, so let me very quickly. So we'll end the our causes of suffering talk. And again, when I come back tomorrow, we'll talk more about the transformation of suffering. But I know in your meditations today, you'll be way ahead of me. So maybe you can teach me something tomorrow.